Welcome to the Mom Manual. Motherhood doesn't come with instructions, but it should. We are on a mission to highlight ordinary moms doing extraordinary things to build the ultimate mom manual. Every week, I have the distinct honor of speaking with women about the lessons they've learned and the inspiration that got them to where they are today. Join us for a conversation that will spark creativity, provide actionable tips, and celebrate the ordinary and extraordinary moments of motherhood. The Mom Manual starts now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mom Manual. I have another amazing guest for you all today. Kelly Coleman is a featured film development executive turned author and advocate for parent caregivers and individuals with disabilities. We have never had a guest on like Kelly, so I am so excited for you to hear all her wisdom and amazing takeaways. Kelly, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me and for providing a resource that is fun to dive into and acknowledging that disability is such a part of this conversation and that we also can have fun conversations and be lighthearted and talk about all the hard things all at the same time, because disability, and certainly as it shows up in our family, like, it is all the things.
Yes. Yeah. Kelly, tell us your story. So you have two boys, 10 and 12, and bring us back to the beginning.
Sure. So my boys, who are the best of friends and wonderful and amazing in all of their own ways, have certainly had a very different and individual journey. My husband and I had our first son, and he was just like the picture of easy baby, and he was sleeping and eating and smiling, and he started talking when he was 10 months old, which was kind of freaky, right? No hair, no teeth, but words, weird. So clearly this was because we were awesome parents and we had it all figured out. Anyone with multiple children sees where this is going. No, we had nothing figured out. Our second son, Aaron, came along, and just with all the love and wonder in the world. And from day one, I felt like there is something going on, and he was passing the tests and checking the boxes, but just that intuition that sometimes we have as moms and as humans that something's going on. Yeah. As an infant and as we came out of the hospital, he was sleeping so much, and people would say, oh, you're so lucky. I'd be like, no, this isn't normal. And they'd be like, no, you're fine. I'm like, there's something going on. We would have to wake him up to get him to eat. He wasn't waking up because he was hungry. When he was awake, he was crying. And it felt different than our friends' babies who had had colic. And the eating challenges were different than previous eating challenges with my other son, with anything I had ever heard of. It just didn't feel right. And I couldn't put my finger on anything. He was passing the tests, and we were going to our pediatrician's office all the time. I was just worried. And we are so fortunate to have a partner in our pediatrician.
Right.
Who said, you can come in as often as you want.
Right.
We will never turn you away. We will always listen to your concerns. We will do the tests. We will make notes of things. We will let you know if we have concerns, but even if we don't, we will always listen.
Right.
And that was such a key part of our journey that led to many diagnoses, hospitalization when he was 3 months old because he was eating almost nothing, and feeding tube and developmental delays, and has amassed diagnoses over the last decade, including a yet undiagnosed genetic syndrome, and within that, autism, epilepsy, cerebral palsy, cortical vision impairment, microcephaly, feeding tube, fine motor, gross motor, sensory processing, cognitive, behavioral, medical. Like, he's just like, I'm going to check all the boxes.
I've never heard. Is this very atypical, or?
Depends on who you hang out with. 10 years ago, I would have been like, whoa, what a wild thing.
Yes.
And now that I have so many friends, especially in the world of rare disease and genetics and syndromes, we're like, oh yeah, it's just Thursday. Cool.
Right.
It is absolutely out of the ordinary to have the combination of things that my son does. what isn't out of the ordinary is just disability.
Right.
Like, it's just math. There, we already know disabled people, even if they have not revealed their disabilities to us.
Right.
And while my son's presentation, certainly he is an outlier, children, babies, adults, people having disabilities, it was something that was never talked about, was never brought up, the math of this could be your child.
Right.
And not in a, like, I'm trying to scare you way, but just in an information way. I wish someone had said, I wish our hospital training class, our doctors would have said, hey, statistically speaking, one in 33 kids will be born with a birth defect. One in six kids will be diagnosed with a developmental disability. And you can, you know, acquire disability. Like, there are just so many factors in play. And if somebody had just said, hey, if this is your kid, we have resources, come to us.
Yep.
Now let's learn to diaper your baby. Would have made everything so much easier, because by not talking about the things, it makes the things seem so scary that we can't possibly even talk about them.
I mean, we're talking 10, your son is 10 now. So 10 years ago, right? And the resources, I mean, 10 years ago, what year is that? 20, where are we? 2014.
So yeah, so, he was born in 2013, which was when all of our journey began.
And yeah, so social media is out at this point. Facebook, there's some groups. Instagram's just beginning. Mm-hmm. So in terms of connecting, I mean, how did you start connecting with other people to share your experience, or just to learn and know who to call and what to do next and what to look for? Like, how did that start? Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of Googling and crying, which is exactly how it happens for most of us, because we're not given a diagnosis and a path.
Right.
We're giving a diagnosis and a wave and good luck.
Yeah.
And like, that's a terrible way to start into any of this.
Yeah.
And I wish I had connected with other families earlier, and especially people who were already on this journey and could say, here are the supports that are available. Here's how to access the supports and to do the things.
Right.
And for me, it really started out as connecting with the parents in the elevator at the therapy appointment. And just those little bits of interactions when you start to meet people who you realize are also in this world. And literally Googling vision impairment was his first diagnosis that he had developed. And interestingly, his vision has evolved and developed because it was a brain processing issue for him, to the point where he now has a tremendous amount of functional vision, which is amazing.
Love that.
And that was the first diagnosis we got. He was an infant and was not responding to bright lights. The doctor was shining in his eyes, like nothing. So I was home and I was crying, and I literally Googled blind children Los Angeles, because that's where we live.
Yeah.
And I called the first organization that popped up in Google.
Yeah.
And was just like crying in a mess and was like, my baby's blind and I don't know what to do, and somebody help me. And the amazing receptionist was just terrific. And she said, hold tight, I'm going to transfer you to Diana. Don't go anywhere.
Right.
And she transferred me to Diana, and Diana became an important part of our journey.
Yeah.
I wish that I had connected with groups either in person or on social media. There are incredible groups, you know, Facebook. There are people posting their stories on Instagram, both of the caregivers who are navigating this with their children, as well as the disabled adults who are sharing their stories, their advocacy, their leadership, their experience.
Yes.
So that I could have learned from a much earlier age about
Right.
disability from actual disabled people.
Right.
Because it is so much less scary than whatever like ignorant things I was making up in my head. And there were many things I was making up that were wrong, because I just had no frame of reference. And what a relief to talk to people who are experiencing disability firsthand.
Yeah.
And feel like, oh, it's not a big deal that my kid has a feeding tube. Oh, okay, cool. It's just such a relief, and just so helpful for my own mental health to really separate, you know, what is hard and what is not. My kid as a human is not hard. Like, he's a great, happy, vibrant kid who contributes so much to the world. And all of this, the paperwork and the planning and the like ordering diapers and seizure meds and all of that, like, that is hard and it's exhausting.
Yeah.
But then to be able to objectively look at that.
No, Kelly, I love this. And I've heard so many times that you can look at any adversity in life one of two ways, as, you know, a burden or a blessing. And I think anybody I know with any child that is disabled in really in a severe way or a limited way, it is like the biggest blessing and privilege of their life to be able to raise this child. So I love that perspective. And I think we can apply that to so many things in life. I want to jump into your takeaways. And I think these apply for if you have a child that is disabled, or you have any child, or even for yourself. You have created a really amazing system. So let's jump into that. Kelly, first takeaway, create a system. Talk to us about that.
So you will be overwhelmed with all of the stuff and the paperwork. The sooner you are able to create a system that allows it to get done. And that includes finding out what is available in your state. So you're fighting for things that actually exist.
Right.
You're connecting with other families who can give you those exact steps. And you're taking care of the day-to-day, but also scheduling time to do the big picture planning. My son will never live independently.
Right.
So we need a whole future care plan and financial plan for him.
Yes.
And if you can create systems, even starting with blocking out time on your calendar when the kids are at school to do the boring stuff,
yep.
It is important, but having the system, make sure that you know it will get done so that you can do other things without feeling guilty and without feeling like this is hanging over your head, because it may not be done today, but Friday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., you know you're going to turn off your internet and you're going to work on the future care plan makes this sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. So, you know, when you talk about the system, I'm hearing blocking out time. What else do you have in that toolkit, I guess, that we call a system?
Yes. For me, it is all about anticipating the things that I can anticipate. We have a lot of unexpected, especially with medical considerations that are in our house, and really looking at what we can anticipate. There are certain meetings I have to have every year. There are appointments. There are phone calls. I have annual reminders on my calendar to schedule these meetings, to request these evaluations, to follow up with these people, and having a bag packed, having caregivers who are on hand, our neighbors who are able to use the feeding tube, care for our older child, remember to take the dog out when she needs to go out. If I am suddenly pulled away from everything, having the emergency plan in place allows the emergency to feel less overwhelming.
Yeah.
It still feels scary, but if you can make it feel doable,
right,
you're approaching it from a place of strength rather than feeling like everything is out the window.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. And I mean, it's one of those things where I think a lot of people now live away from family, right? You mentioned a neighbor. I mean, for years we've had an au pair. So I think it's even if you're saying we have paid help, it's a babysitter that comes once a week. And, you know, then we train this person because the family piece is not always there. But I love talking about neighbors and we have that same thing. Like, we moved to a new neighborhood and there's been times where it's like, I'm on a business trip and my husband's driving somebody to soccer and this, and then, you know, one of my children needs to walk home, but I don't want them home alone for even 10 minutes. So, you know, can they just pop by their house? But getting that in place, it's all, what I'm hearing really is it's just like anticipating what's happening, right? And it's being the master of your own fate rather than just letting things happen to you. Another piece of this that I think, you know, you can take and talk about this with, again, a child that is disabled or just anything. I mean, right now I'm starting to plan summer camps And if I don't plan them now, they'll be all sold out, right? So it's really just taking a step back. And as a business owner, this is something I need to do too. Like, it is March of 2024, and I am already planning things for 25 and 26. Because if I don't, like, it will just come up onto us and just happen. So I love that on the system. And I think that really leads us into the next takeaway, where you said, learn what you can and cannot control. Talk to us about that, Kelly.
It would be so nice if we could control everything. That would make my life so much easier. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
And so many families on the journey of parenting a disabled child start out from the same place where we started, is if we work hard enough, we can fix this. If we do this right, we can fix all the things.
Right.
And number one, if we can move away from trying to fix our children, because that is not within our control, and they are fully realized humans in and of themselves.
Right.
But what can I control? I can control the supports and services he is getting.
Right.
That will maximize all of the great things about who he is and wants to be. And I can be sure that his goals in his education plan are goals that are serving him. I can be sure those are followed up on. I can have regular communication with the teacher. I might not be able to control which specialist we see if there's only one specialist in my city or county or state.
Right.
But I can control how I come into that interaction. Maybe if there's a specialist who's not awesome, most of them will be, some of them won't, then I can seek a second opinion and I can look at all of the stuff. I can't control what services are available in my state.
Yeah.
Unless I am part of the state government, in which case, yes, control them and make them easier to access for all people. But I can just have real information so that I'm not fighting for the wrong things. If I'm fighting for something that doesn't exist or can't or won't ever happen, I will never win. I will exhaust myself and I will feel like a failure. And I don't ever need to feel that way because it was never going to happen in the first place.
Yeah. You know, this to me really sounds like a mindset shift, right? So I think this is something for a parent who has a disabled child. It's easy to say, and we can internalize, yeah, I get that. Some things I can't control. But how do you really make that mind shift to go from, I'm holding on to this idea of what I thought the life for my child would be, and I want to so badly give that to them and fix it for them to get there, but that may not be possible. And my child's going to walk a different journey. Like, how do you make that mindset shift?
So that is such a shift that is so deeply personal for each person.
Yeah.
And wherever you are on that journey, you need to validate that with no shame and no judgment and surround yourself with people who will walk the path with you.
Yeah.
I would love to quote unquote fix my son's epilepsy. It stinks.
Yep.
And the calibration for me isn't about I need to give up on dreams for my child.
Right.
It's looking at my preconceptions, and frankly, for both of my kids, what are my preconceptions of who my child would be?
Yeah.
Versus what are they and who are they showing me that they are?
Mm-hmm.
If I was really hoping, you know, I imagined both of my kids would be driving and going to college and speaking with verbal conversations and all of these things. We need to acknowledge that it is harder to be disabled than not.
Right.
And I'm getting that directly from so many of the experts that I interviewed for my book who are disabled themselves.
Yeah.
And it is harder to be a caregiver for the rest of my life for him than not. I never envisioned a life where I was changing my 10-year-old's diapers for now and perhaps for forever, to be determined, I envisioned retiring. I envisioned not lifting my child and having the back pain. Like, the caregiving is a big piece.
Yeah.
That we need to view as a job. And it is not a choice that I'm making. This was a surprise that came to me.
Yeah.
And honoring wherever you are and knowing that the more you can lean into your love for your child,
yep,
the more that it makes it doable. And it's okay to say, I'm exhausted, I'm overwhelmed, I am facing challenges that none of my friends are facing.
Yeah.
As caregivers, we often feel like we need to erase our own existence, especially if we are non-disabled caregivers taking care of disabled children,
right,
that we want to center their experience. But making peace with what is often about connecting with other caregivers and validating that our existence counts too,
yeah,
and that we can create a path forward that includes the caregiving and the disability and all of the things. None of our paths are exactly as we expected. Everyone has a hard thing or many hard things.
Right.
I know what my hard thing is, and because I love my kid, sometimes it is very hard, but it is always doable because that love is always there.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes unpopular opinion to talk about religion, but I am very religious, and I do feel God, higher power, whatever you want to call it, only gives us as much as we can handle, right? And your son was sent to you because you have a higher threshold than somebody else to experience this and handle this and help him thrive. So I always look at life in that way, where every challenge we have, it's for our personal growth, and it's a bigger, and you know, this really, I don't think you'd even consider it a challenge. It's a blessing that he gets to be in your
challenge.
Well, you know, again, it's of course it is, but you know, in terms of, I don't know, I think everything we have, like, we can look at it one of two ways. It can be, we talked about it earlier, it can be for something that you're like, oh, this is a burden to me, or it's like an opportunity that I get to rise to. Not that it's easy, it's hard, right? And I can never speak to your journey because I don't walk the same path. But I love your attitude and perspective on this. And our last takeaway, Kelly, you will be overwhelmed. You've talked about this. Mm-hmm. Find a small task where you can find a victory and start there. What's one task that you feel like, you know, is a daily victory for you?
Everybody's wearing pants. That is a victory.
I love it. That's a small one.
Right? Is there some form of dinner happening? That is a victory.
I love it.
There is no, like, you should be doing this or you have to be doing this.
Yes.
Especially when the support needs are so great, the exhaustion and the overwhelm can also be very great.
Yeah.
Start from there and say, yup, this is a hard day. And maybe you do not have the energy to call your insurance company for 2.5 hours. Because nobody does, because it's always awful.
Yes.
But looking at, I can email my son's teacher, move the therapy appointment that we need to shift because of a doctor's appointment. Look at the tiny things where you can check that off the list, because those tiny things add up.
Yes. And I love that so much. I have found I've started waking up at 4:15 in the morning. It's incredibly early, but that's like my win for the day, where I wake up and I'm like, I got out of bed. I go to a 5 a.m. gym class. Yes. I've gone to my gym class. I'm like, whatever happens today, I've already won. I'm a winner. Like, and I love that. And it's such a simple thing. It's like, I just got out of bed, but I'm like, most of the world can't commit to going to bed at 8:30 or 9 o'clock the night before, right?
Yes, that's when you start. People.
Yes. So it's like, it's such a, you know, it's a silly thing. It's a small thing, but for me, it's like, I'm a night person. It's a massive victory. And I go into every day being like, doesn't matter what happens today. Like, I'm a winner. I love it. Like, I've had a victory. It's like you hear people make your bed in the morning, start with a win. I love that, Kelly. Kelly, you are such an inspiration with all of everything that's going on in your life and your son's multiple disabilities. You have found time to write a book to support other women, other parents, families. I just think what you're doing is amazing. So I have one last question for you. What would you tell yourself 10 years ago? And this is going to be the answer to any new mom who's just got a diagnosis or just feels there's something wrong. What would you say to Kelly 10 years ago?
Yes. So even as you're asking that, I'm starting to tear up because, wow, it just takes you back very quickly to a really challenging time.
Yeah.
When we first started down this path, all anyone ever told us was, I'm so sorry. And we just got heaped on the pity of, I don't know how you're going to do this. I could never do this. This is so terrible. Oh my goodness, this is a tragedy. I'm so sorry. And so, of course, I felt terrible. And it felt like I was just falling down this bottomless pit.
Yeah.
And I was never coming out of it. And oh, here I go. I'm going to cry. The one thing that I wish someone had told me.
Yeah.
So I wish someone had said, however you are feeling now, you will feel better. Yeah. That was actually the original title of the book.
Yeah.
Because that is what I needed to hear.
Yeah.
Not everybody's fixes or this, or isn't this great, or isn't this terrible, or everybody heaping everything onto me.
Yeah.
But just acknowledging you are feeling all of these hard things now, and this is not forever.
Yeah.
And the thing that connects you from where you are now, just bottomless pit, here you go. You'll hit the bottom a couple of times. And to everything feeling okay.
Yeah.
The thing that connects that is just how much you love this kid.
Yes.
Not, oh, here I go, I'm crying again. Not just because he's your baby and you love your baby.
Right.
Because you will get to know him.
Yeah.
For the human that he is.
Right.
And he will show you what he needs and what the path is.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's easy.
Right.
But there is so much love in every minute of it.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so hard, is that you love this kid so much. And it is doable.
Yeah. And you'll find a way.
Yeah.
I love that, Kelly. For anybody who wants to read your book or connect with you, where can everyone find you?
Yes, absolutely. So my book is available at all the book places, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookseller. And my website is kellycoleman.com, and that's K-E-L-L-E-Y, Coleman. And would love to connect with everyone. And I so appreciate coming into learning from you and your community and just being a part of the conversation.
Thank you, Kelly. This is fantastic. We really appreciate you opening up and sharing all your wisdom. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.